This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albracht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome in, everybody. Happy Tuesday to you on Sports Daily. Jacob Albracht back in after a few days off alongside Tommy Kester, Jad Chambers in studio producing Forrest Manning, our IHOP hotline. Glad to be with you. Glad to give you that IHOP hotline to get in touch with us at 869-1240. You can also get in touch with us on our video streams. You can find us on 12 News Plus Connected. You can find us on Facebook, YouTube, and X. Lots of different ways for you to get in touch with the program. We will have a giveaway for you today as well. Here we go. It's a Tuesday, a doubleheader Monday Night Football in the books. I'm in on the doubleheader Monday Night Footballs, by the way. I think it's a good idea. I think they should keep doing it. But we're here. Royals back in action today. Tommy, I know Royals fans are pretty nervous right now. I'm nervous for them. But we've got that to talk about. Mike Gillespie, Kings of Kauffman, will join us bottom of this hour to break it down, a Royals insider. We'll also have our Chiefs insider, Dan Israel, to get us through the Chiefs talk today. My apologies. It's Max who you're going to talk to if you call that IHOP hotline, Max Power. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
Man, I'm good. It's good to see you today. I hope that you're rested and you're back home. I know that it's been a long few days for you, but glad to have you back on the show. Glad that we're back together, reunited. It feels so good, and looking forward to getting into it.
A five-state journey a couple of times in just a handful of days, but it was good. It was good. I had some family time, got some things taken care of, and here we go right into the thick of things as the home stretch for the Royals is going to be chaotic. We'll get into that with Mike in a few minutes. Your thoughts there, of course. But let's talk a little football. Monday Night Football, two games that sort of had, things to pay attention to, not just because we generally watch whatever the NFL feeds us, but these had implications to some degree to what the Chiefs are doing here, Tommy, as you've got, the two biggest contenders, no offense to the Ravens last year, but generally speaking, it's sort of the Ravens and then the Bills and the Bengals every year with the Chiefs. The Chiefs, of course, have had the better of the Bills always in the playoffs. The Bengals have had better luck against the Chiefs in the playoffs. The Bengals now, though, 0-3, the Bills 3-0. And Tommy, I would tell you, all the talk in the offseason was the Bills are going to take a major step back without Steph Diggs, without Gabe Davis. Who's Josh Allen going to throw the ball to? That window is closing, I heard plenty of times. I didn't subscribe to that. And then the Bengals, I did subscribe to being one of the real contenders. They're now 0-3. I don't know if I'm ready to take them off the contender list. In fact, I do know. I'm not ready to take them off the contender list. That was a team that darn near beat the Chiefs. But man, I don't know what to make of that one more on the Bengals, or that Jaden Daniels looks just incredible. The Washington offense with Cliff Kingsbury has basically scored on every drive for 2 weeks now, but pretty impressive stuff from them last night. But do you still view both of these teams, by the time we get to January, as contenders for the Super Bowl against the Chiefs?
No, I don't. I mean, I think that the Bengals have basically played their way out of that, in my opinion. You're 0-3, and I get that they've got a tremendous amount of talent, and we all know what the Bengals can do, but their defense is abysmal. It's not good whatsoever. And it really hasn't been through the first 3 weeks of the season. And I think at the end of the day, you are what your record says that you are. And they're 0-3. They're going to win some games, don't get me wrong, but they've dug themselves a hole that is really difficult historically for teams to get out of if they want to make the playoffs. There are not very many teams in the NFL, going back decades, that have started a season 0-3 that have ultimately become a playoff team. Can the Bengals do it? Sure, because, yeah, you've got Joe Burrow and you've got your weapons and you've got all of that. But, man, I'm not convinced from what I've seen out of the Bengals. I know they played the Chiefs close, and I know that, they always play the Chiefs close. I mean, we know that going back the last four or five times those teams matched up, that it's a field goal game, in a lot of cases, like it was last week, even closer than that. But they lose to the Patriots. They lose to the Commanders last night. Neither one of those teams, I think, were very high up on people's radar as far as being, legitimate NFL teams this season. So, no, I'm out on the Bengals. I think that they will win some games, but I don't think that because of the way that they've started this season that they can dig themselves out of this hole and become a playoff team. On the other side of it, the Bills, I'm bought in on, and I wasn't at the beginning of the season. I didn't subscribe. I know you mentioned that people were saying the window was closed. I wasn't buying into that necessarily. I didn't subscribe to that, but I did think that there was going to be some rebuilding. I mean, look, they basically replaced everybody on that, offense, except for Josh Allen. And I know that obviously James Cook is somebody that's been around and has been effective for them, but at least from, the receiving point of view, they basically rebuilt that entire wide receiver room. And I was of the impression that it was going to take a little bit of time for that to get rebuilt, and it took quicker than I thought it would. That was extremely impressive the way that they were able to have that offensive onslaught last night.
I think for me, the biggest reason, and I probably said this with the picks because I still picked them to win the East, was that their receiving core wasn't as decimated maybe as we thought, if you like Khalil Shakir, and I do, because they have two tight ends there that they were going to use. It honestly, it reminds me a little bit of how the Chiefs reinvented themselves offensively post Tyreek Hill. You still got the great quarterback. There's still pieces there. And James Cook was awesome last year, and he didn't go anywhere. And so they just sort of reinvented what they were on offense, but they're still Josh Allen. Their defense has been ahead of schedule probably as much as anything. So I'm not terribly surprised, but I'm not also not. I am a little surprised they've been this dominant this early. Tip of the hat to Josh Allen and the coaching staff. They're very for real, and they look really good. The Bengals do this all the time. The last 2 years, I think they've been 1-2 to open the season. And then they just sort of catch fire late in a year, and they've been doing that for a while. They've just never been as good in the regular season as they probably should be in this era. Now, in 22, they did finish really strong, but they do this. They stumble out of the gates all the time, and all of this was riding, all right, Joe Burrow's back, and here we go. It was a defense that let him down, obviously, last night, and against the Chiefs, it was a couple of mistakes that let them down, but that was a game. I think if you're the Bengals in that game, you feel like you should have won it. I don't know about last night. In the first week, I didn't watch a second of that game, so I don't have a strong opinion on the Patriots game, but I know they were good enough to almost get the Chiefs in Arrowhead. So as they come up on a schedule where they'll play Carolina, they do have a tough one against Baltimore, but the Giants, Cleveland's mixed in there. The Raiders are mixed in there. They're going to start to pile up some wins. I would still consider them a contender because I think they have way too many good players not to be. When T. Higgins is fully healthy, I don't know how much they'll miss Joe Mixon, but if their defense doesn't play better, then I'd be concerned. I don't recall watching the Chiefs game, Tommy, and thinking, oh man, this is a terrible defense. You know what I mean? Last night they looked terrible, but I don't think we had that feeling in the Chiefs game. So we'll see on them. They've still got Burrow. I'm not counting them out.
And to your point, they have stumbled out of the gate in years past, but the difference is they've never started 0-3 in the Joe Burrow era.
They've been one and two.
At one point they were 0-2-1. But they've not started 0-3 at any point in the Joe Burrow era. So this is, uncharted territory a little bit for the Bengals. Do they have the opportunity to turn it around? Absolutely. And it starts with a Carolina team that, by the way, Andy Dalton just came in and made the Panthers look really good on Sunday. So that
felt so stupid.
It's ridiculous. So who knows what'll happen there? And I don't think anybody thought that the Patriots in Week 1 would beat the Bengals. So who knows with the Panthers? But just going on their game by game schedule moving forward, I mean, they've got winnable games coming up at Carolina. They're at the Giants. They're at the Browns. But if you go even further down, I mean, watching the way that this Bengals team has played through 3 weeks, it wouldn't surprise me if they're 4-6 through their first 10 games. You know, if that, and that's kind of like on the upside. I mean, they'd be over 500 in their next 7 to get to 4-6. They could do it for sure. I'm just not counting on it.
Well, the good news for them is Baltimore has struggled out of the gates. Cleveland has struggled out of the gates. Indianapolis has struggled out of the gates. Jacksonville's a total non-factor. Miami struggled out of the gates. So as I look at it, yeah, I'll put the Chiefs in Buffalo and Pittsburgh ahead of them. I'll even give you Houston after their loss. That's still putting them in that 5-7 range, and they feel like a chip in a chair kind of a team in the postseason to me. Like, if I'm the Chiefs, I don't want to see the Bengals in the postseason. Not the way that those games have gone historically. And I think it's a far cry to say the Bengals wouldn't be in the top 7 teams in the AFC to reach the postseason. They've got to figure some things out. They obviously have to win games, but I think clearly they're one of the top 7 teams in the AFC, even at 0-3, when you look at collectively what everybody's done. And but again, they've got to win the games. They've got experience doing that late in the season. So we'll see you like it. If you're the Chiefs, you'd love to not see the Bengals in the postseason. You'd love to see somebody else get in there. The Jaguars are a total mess. I don't think there's even much. They've become a completely uninteresting team to me. The Commanders, however, have become a really interesting team. Jaden Daniels looks fantastic. His accuracy jumps off the screen at you. The zip on his balls jumps off the screen, and obviously we knew he was a runner. If he can, and they talked about it a lot last night, if he can figure out a way to preserve his body and stay healthy, which right now I would say he's not doing a tremendous job of, but it's not the worst that we've seen. He's got a chance to be really, really special. And everyone's saying, oh, did the Bears get it wrong? Did the Bears get it wrong? I don't know, because I think Caleb Williams has looked fine too, pretty good. So I don't think that that's necessarily the case. I just think it's a case where both of those guys look like they're going to be good quarterbacks. Man, Daniels and Cliff Kingsbury appears to be the absolute perfect fit, because you look across the field on there, like, they've got Terry McLaurin, Brian Robinson's all right, De'Ami Brown. Like, they're getting it done with some dudes that people didn't give them a lot of credit for. They're a dangerous team. I don't like any team in the NFC East more than them definitively. I mean, I just like not the way they've been playing on offense. Their defense isn't very good, but their offense is looking great.
Yeah, it was kind of a revelation, I think, last night, and kind of a coming out party on the big stage on Monday Night Football at the NFL level for Jaden Daniels. I've been a big Jaden Daniels fan for a long time, and I felt like whatever team brought him in, if they would let him be Jaden Daniels, if they could unlock him a little bit and just kind of let him run wild, then at that point, that's where you get to see some of those spectacular plays. That one play, when you combine the arm strength of Jaden Daniels and the speed of Terry McLaurin, that long touchdown pass was incredible. And the fact that he beat the coverage and it was kind of a flick of the wrist, and Daniels was able to put that perfectly in the breadbasket of McLaurin. It's like, man, like that is potentially going to be a connection that we see for a long time. A lot of people have loved Terry McLaurin for years. And it wasn't that I never saw it. I just never believed that he could do it consistently, because he never had a quarterback that I felt like could get him the ball consistently. And after seeing what he's been able to do and that connection that he's formed with Jaden Daniels, I'm looking forward to watching that for a long time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's had 1,000 yards basically every year of his career. His first year.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. He's been really good with terrible quarterbacks. But, yeah, for instance, in fantasy drafts and things like that, I'm kind of like, yeah, he's got a ton of talent and he's going to put up yards. But, you know, historically, at least in his career, he's played with bad quarterbacks.
Daniels, as good as he was, he missed McLaurin twice on potential touchdowns. Yeah. Like that's going to only grow. Like they're good and their defense sucks, but so they're probably not a real contender with that defense, but man,
they could make it interesting. Watching, they could absolutely
love watching Jaden Daniels play.
The Cowboys the Cowboys are pretenders. The Eagles, in my opinion, are completely underwhelming with the amount of talent they have on that roster. I know they beat the Saints, but I'm not impressed with the Eagles whatsoever, except for Saquon Barkley. If you know, that's the only thing in my mind that's the saving grace right now for the Eagles, and then the Giants are the
Giants.
They'll
get A.J. Brown. They'll get A.J. Brown back. They're pretty good, I think. The Cowboys are not. But I think the Eagles. But either way, the Commanders are right there with either one of those teams, at least on an individual game-to-game basis. It's good Monday Night Football. It's good to see these young quarterbacks survive. In a year and years now, going plural, where quarterback play has really been suppressed because of this two-deep safety thing, it's fun to see good quarterback play. And you saw two great quarterbacks in that game last night. I mean, man, they looked good. Trevor Lawrence was the worst quarterback of the four teams, not even close, of the four we saw last night. He is average at best, it would appear, at this point in his career, which is too bad for all the, you know, the accolades and everything he had coming into it. But just a quick Monday Night Football recap there. I don't think there's anything else out of those games to take. Are you with the two Monday Night Football game situation we have here?
100%.
I think it's great.
If they could, and it, at least the way that I see it, is take away Thursday Night Football and move that game into a doubleheader every week on Monday night. I don't think you need Thursday Night Football. There are so many different reasons why that shouldn't be primetime game on Thursday nights, but I love the thought. I love the idea of just having double headers every single Monday night. And I like the staggering too. I like having one start about an hour to hour and a half before the other one. And then you kind of have, you know, a whole evening of football. I'm definitely on board with that.
I don't like it when I miss my opportunity to make a bet because I was taking James Cook first touchdown, but we couldn't get across the Kansas border fast enough on our drive home last night. I got the other one. I got the Jamar Chase one, but I was so mad. I was just like, I didn't even realize it started at 6:30. I'm going in to put him like, why can't I put this in? I didn't even realize it happened. I was like, you got to be kidding me. But, you know, whatever. Nobody cares about that. All right. Let's take a quick break and we'll sort of gear you up for the Royals here. And then we'll bring in Mike Gillespie later in the hour as well. You'll hear the Royals, by the way, on the Odyssey app. You can hear us on the Odyssey app as well, odyssey.com. Just download the app, search for KFH to get started. You can also leave us voicemails there, which is kind of fun. You can do that and send those to us. You just go, there's a little microphone and you can do that. But we'll talk a little Royals next when we return. It's Jacob Albrock. This is Tommy Caster. It's a Tuesday on Sports Daily. Don't go away.
Cullen Huck's power washing is like getting to the top of Mount Everest with only a bag of beef jerky and a soda. Huck's can conquer all residential or commercial exterior cleaning woes that you have, leaving you feeling like you're on top of the world. House washing, window cleaning, driveway.
No one tells me stuff until you told me. You're good. I was screwed yesterday.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, MIDI.com.
Talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. I want to tell you about Pep and Suter Remodeling here. These are the guys that did, we did a summer remodel. We did the kitchen. We did a little office work and a little bit in the basement. And we couldn't be happier with the work that was done, honestly. You know, we didn't know what to expect. Even if we've had questions after the job is done, everything's paid for, I can give Pepin a call. He walks me through it, answers those questions, checks on things. But, you know, I've said this before. We had by far the best bid, by far, not even close. And then a customer service level that, you know, I've built two businesses, and customer service is everything when you're dealing with contractors. And as far as this project, it could not have been better. They were so gracious to give us as much access as they could while they did this. We didn't feel nearly as left out of being able to use our kitchen as some people do during those remodels where they can't use it. So can't recommend them enough. Give Pepin a call, 316-573-6822. That's 316-573-6822 for all your home remodeling needs. Pepin Suter Contracting. They did a great job, and we were happy to have them as supporters of the program. All right, Tommy, it is Royals baseball season, and the Royals are struggling. I saw in Ted's update the chances that all the, you know, the guessing services put it at about 60%. And well, I would guess that if we polled Royals fans, they wouldn't tell you they're feeling about 60% good right now. We bring in Mike Gillespie from Kings of Kaufman here. Mike, I don't know. I think Royals fans are probably feeling like it looks more about like 6% the way things have been going. It's, of course, not quite that bad, but my goodness, what a disaster of a week it was.
Well, you're right. You know, when I was with you a week ago, we were talking about, you know, maybe on the show today, we'd be talking about a playoff spot. We're talking about a playoff spot, but not quite the way we expected it. But, you know, that's what happens when a contending team just, you know, gets home for its final homestand and drops six games and seven in a row.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Mike. I mean, clearly, offensively, the I guess you can call it anemic bats for the Royals over the last week or so. And really, the offense has not been particularly good in the month of September in general. But really, that's been on full display over the last week. I saw a stat that was referencing Vinny Pasquantino going on the IL. And the Royals have really struggled with runners in scoring position. And I saw this stat that from the beginning of the season until August 30th, when Pasquantino was put on the IL, that the Royals were hitting like .295 with runners in scoring position collectively. Once Pasquantino went on the IL on August 30th, ever since that time, they've been batting around the Mendoza line with runners in scoring position. And so obviously, having the loss of Pasquantino in the lineup to drive in runs, we're seeing that happen game after game after game, where we've seen players get on base. We just have had an issue with getting those players in and scoring runs.
Well, that, you know, that's exactly right. And you know, I think it's a lot of people, I think it's been easy for them to say, well, when Vinny went down, the whole lineup went down. What a lot of people forget is about the time Vinny went on the IL, Witt went into a slump. I mean, he really did. He's coming out of it now. And at the same time, even though Perez was getting some key hits, I think it's fair to say that he's starting to press some. He's chasing that low and away pitch again. So it's more than Pasquantino. I mean, it's top to bottom. There isn't a hitter other than Witt right now who looks like they're not in a slump.
This has been a streaky team all year long. That part shouldn't surprise us. And I like to be an optimist, especially when things look this dire, as much as you can be. That streaking the other way could be timing out perfectly. Like if this stays a streaky team and they can get it turned around, obviously, to get there, and that times into the playoffs, they're going to be a really hard team to beat. But it is very hard to look at it that way now, seven losses in a row with all of these teams now back in the mix for these. You've got four teams maybe five, but unlikely, but at least four playing these two spots. You've got a series against the Nationals here. They have to win these games against the Nationals. We don't want to come into this thing with their backs against the wall even further, taking on the Braves in Atlanta.
No, I agree. And I remember when we kind of talked about these things last week, I talked about how I was kind of nervous about the Giants series because it seemed to me like it might be setting up as a trap series. The same thing with going to Washington. They don't have the best pitching, but you know, Washington is a team with absolutely nothing to lose. They're 18 games under 500, and they're putting the target on the Royals' backs for the next three nights. I really think that's dangerous. Then you go to Atlanta, where right now, you know, almost the biggest series in baseball is what the Braves are doing for the next 3 days, playing the Mets, only two games behind them. And if the Braves win or sweep that series, they're going to be awfully hungry when the Royals get there Friday. So there are no games to overlook in the next six, none.
Yeah, so Mike, a little bit about me. I'm a Braves fan, grew up a Braves fan, obviously, you know, cheer on the Royals too, but I actually, for the Royals' benefit, I hope the Mets, you know, are able to take two of three or maybe even sweep the Braves for the Royals, because at that point, the Braves are going to be out of the wild card mix and they're not going to have quite as much to play for. They're getting up for this series against the Mets this week. And then, you know, maybe by the time the weekend rolls around, you know, it won't be quite as crucial for the Braves, at least in that matchup against Kansas City. But as you mentioned, if Atlanta is able to take a couple, you know, from New York in this next to last series for them, then at that point, you're talking about two teams in the final regular season matchup, final regular season series that will both be battling for wild card spots, for playoff spots, with the final couple of games left. And it could be a really, really tough matchup, to your point. So obviously, the Royals are now in a position where, yeah, you can only control what you can control, but you're certainly crossing your fingers that a few other things happen, especially with your own wild card race in the American League.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you know, if you hear any of the Royals in the next couple of days saying, "Hey, we're not watching any other teams except the one we're playing," you know, we're not paying any attention to any other teams. Yeah, they are. They yeah. really are, because they know they need a little sure. bit of help right now.
I mean, you just the missed opportunity came this weekend, because now you get it where you've got the Twins get to play the Marlins here. You know, the Mariners against the Astros may help, maybe, but the Astros have that thing locked up as far as the division goes. I just, if the magic number's at six and you only play six games, there's no way we can imagine the Royals winning all six here. Of course, they could. But if you don't get at least two or three against Washington, I don't know how much help they're going to get from the other teams to shrink that number. That's the problem I see now, is even with like the Twins struggling, they get to play the Marlins here down the stretch. I think Detroit gets the Rays and the White Sox. I mean, it's just... The other side of the magic number doesn't look as helpful as it did this time last week.
No, definitely not. And you know, when I was a few days ago looking at the last week schedule, the thing that stood out to me most was, oh my, look what the Tigers end with. Three at home with the White Sox. Yeah. I mean, that's not good. And it's not good for the Royals. It's great for the Tigers. But yeah, this, you know, when they went to this format several years ago on Sunday, the last day of the season, everybody starts at exactly the same time. You know, it hadn't worked out all that well for a few years. The races are usually decided, but this weekend, you know, Sunday's going to mean something, unless, as you say, the Royals reel off five in a row going into Sunday. But yeah, it's exciting stuff.
Are you concerned, Mike? I know there's a lot to be concerned about right now going into the final week of the regular season, but we've talked about the lack of offense from Kansas City. I was at the game on Saturday against the Giants when the Giants put up 9 against Kansas City, and you know, Brady Singer had a rough outing. It seemed like, you know, every time I looked up, oh, there's another home run, you know, going out right there. You know, Matt Chapman's going to hit another one, you know, for the Giants. Are you concerned about at least, you know, maybe specifically Brady Singer or just the rotation in general? There's been so much focus put on the lack of offense. Are we still seeing some issues there with starting pitching?
Yeah. And, you know, if you look at everybody's projections on the Royals' probable starters in Washington, note that tomorrow is to be determined. There's only one reason for that, and that's Lorenzen.
Yeah,
they think he's about ready to come off the IL. And the question, I think, for Cotrero is if Lorenzen comes back and is ready to come back now, does he slot Lorenzen in instead of Marsh on Wednesday in Washington, or does he let Marsh take the mound and slot Lorenzen in Friday night in Singer's slot? And if I were Cotrero, I'd be awfully tempted to hold him off till Friday, and to at least have him standing by ready to go if Marsh gets in trouble tomorrow, because, you know, Singer has a history of slowing down late in the year. And right now, I think when it gets right down to it, he's the shakiest guy in that rotation.
Isn't Marsh, is it the first and the fourth that Marsh has been bad in all year? I think it's the first at least. They've got some options because you could use Marsh as an emergency either day too, yeah. I suppose. You know, if you wanted to go Lorenzen and Singer and then just have Marsh ready to roll. It's the offense for me. You go into Washington and score a ton of runs like that's you're going to be, when they get this series, they're in a pitcher with an ERA below 4.30. That's going to start any of these games for Washington. It's time to make this not about the pitching. Like, can you go score 6-7 runs a couple of times and reopen this? I think the hard part is, I don't know if it's just a cold streak or if this offense just isn't really capable of that, sustaining that without Vinny Pasquantino. But I think that they are, but they feel like they're pressing, and I don't know if a day off can help. But do you get any sense in the clubhouse? Does this seem like a team? It does from the outside that would be equipped to just sort of push this to the side and start over a little bit, but that's easier said than done. And they've obviously never faced a test like this.
No, that's true. And, you know, I think it's one thing that's important to remember about the makeup of this team is they've got some veterans who've been in these situations before. They've fought for postseason spots. They've played in the postseason, but they're also relying on a lot of guys who've never been there. And I think there'll be some natural pressing, but something needs to happen to shake them up. Maybe a team meeting, which I don't know is that big a deal. Some people think that Cotrero ought to just go out on the field, find a reason to throw a fit, get kicked out, and make a big display. Or maybe they need a fight, something like that. But I don't think any of that's going to help. I think they just need to hit. And if I were Matt Cotrero, if I've got anybody getting on base who can run, I'm going to start running. They've got to make something happen, and that's one way they can do it. And they've got people who can run.
Yeah, and I think following up on that, Mike, I mean, having kind of a spark starting from somewhere, that's got to be essential for Kansas City. And in a lot of cases, it does start with the manager. And, you know, hearing Cotrero talk after the finale against the Giants on Sunday, and then hearing about, and I read a story over the weekend about what the Royals clubhouse is currently like right now after this losing streak in the homestand and how bad it was. Cotrero, you know, sounded fairly dejected in his postgame presser on Sunday in that finale. Rightfully so. It's been, you know, such a disaster lately, but it was kind of painted a grim picture a little bit. He sounded frustrated. He sounded dejected a little bit. You know, that sort of thing carries over into the clubhouse, obviously, and it sounds like that's kind of been the case right now. In your mind, with Matt Cutrero in this final week of the regular season, I know both of these things are important, so don't get me wrong, but in your mind, what's more important for Matt Cutrero? Is it more important to try to get the clubhouse back together and try to find a way to have that spark? Or is it more important that the strategy, you know, whether that is figuring out the rotation or getting guys on base to steal bases, what's more important to you that Cutrero does well this final week of the regular season?
Well, Cutrero is going to do what Cutrero is going to do. And what I mean by that, take for example, the Washington starters this week. They're all left-handers. And Cutrero kind of gets tempted to bench MJ and Isbell and Massey when that happens. Well, I'm leaving Massey in the lineup. That's one thing he can do. But I do think it'd be great if he could find some way to start, as you call, that spark. Because, you know, he's usually calm, cool, and collected. But, you know, what you're talking about on Sunday, I think, is when he said – after the game, something along the lines of, you can't accurately describe the level of frustration in this clubhouse. That's really unlike him. So, you know, something's wrong.
That's not good. That's not good. Well, we'll see. Look, tonight it's advantage Royals. It's Reagan's on the mound. They have the pitching advantage. It's a team that has not been good this year. At some point, they got to just go win games. I mean, that's what it comes down to. You could just basically say the postseason starts now. I mean, if you want to look at it that way, you get an extra week, Royals fans, of postseason baseball. How about we'll spin it that way?
Yeah,
but it's going to be crazy. What do you guys have going at Kings of Coffin for us, Mike?
Well, quite a bit. It's I had a story up this morning. Just kind of a news roundup, and talked some about the potential return of Lorenzen. One of our new guys has a story up right now about the longest playoff droughts in Royals history, which is good. And of course, we'll be jumping all over each game. One thing I would be remiss if I didn't say, you know, people have been talking about the Royals altering their rotation to get ready for a wild card series. If they follow the rotation the way it's set, and it comes down to the weekend, I mentioned Singer would be next up for Friday, but look at Saturday and Sunday. We're talking Seth Lugo on Saturday and Cole Reagans on Sunday. I feel good about that, if that's what we come down to. So I don't want to see Cutrero tinker with the rotation just for the playoffs. He's got to get there first.
Yeah, for sure. That would be get no days off now, right? There's no way to skip a start. I don't think you do that either. So I'm with you there. All right. Follow Mike on social media. Kings of Coffman, all covered for us. We'll all hold our breath for the next week. Here we go, Royals baseball. Get some help on the other side of it, too. Man, if you could get wins or losses on the other side are just as good at this point. Mike, we appreciate it. Thanks for hopping on.
Yep, thanks, guys.
There goes our Royals insider, Mike Gillespie. You love and hate this, don't you? I mean, you hate that it's, you know, you hate that it's come on this 7-game losing streak, Tommy, but you love that this last week of baseball feels this way. You know, I guess it could have just as easy they could be on a 7-game win streak to be in the position they're in. Like you really have to just retrain your brain and start it over. I'm glad they had a day off yesterday. Yikes. I don't know.
Yeah. I read an article yesterday, I believe, or maybe it was on Sunday, about how the Royals players, like, obviously frustration abounds in the clubhouse, but also they're packing to go on this road trip. And they don't know how long they're going to be gone. You know, if they make the playoffs, there's a wild card round. They're going to be on the road for the wild card round. They're not going to be the first team, you know, or the home team in the wild card series. So they don't know. They're packing like, are we going to be gone for a week, longer than a week? We don't really know. And that's kind of an uncertain, you know, place to be. And really, they've played their way into this position where honestly, they've got nobody to blame but themselves.
Yeah, we pack, just reuse your underwear. Like, come on now. Like, that, let's not worry about that, Royals. Like, let's worry about, you know, scoring a few runs. Man, what? Let's make our stand. We've had the day off. There's six games to go. Will the Royals make the postseason? Tom and I'll give you we'll make our stand. We'll give you our thoughts on that when we return. The IHOP hotline is back open at 869-1240. Your video comments welcome as well on some of the video streams. We've got Chiefs insider Dan Israel coming up top of next hour. We'll dig in to the Kansas City Chiefs, but we'll finish this hour with some Royals talk. Tommy, let's make our stand. Six games to go. Royals right now sit tied with Detroit for the second wild card spot. They are a game ahead of Minnesota. They are a game and a half ahead of Seattle. Will the Kansas City Royals reach the postseason in 2024? Can't believe we're asking this question, but we're going to do it. I'll go first. I think they will. I think that starting pitching in general terms has been too good. And I think eventually they'll score some runs. And even if they don't score some runs, maybe they can get a win in a 3-2 game instead of losing a 3-2 game. But I think they'll get enough. They need a combination of six things. There's enough teams that could potentially lose games to help them. I'll say yes by the skin of their teeth.
I'm going to say no by the skin of their teeth. I'm going to go the opposite direction. As much as I desperately want them to, there's been nothing in the last week plus that has indicated to me that they are going to turn it around and figure it out. We know this team has been streaky all season long. Streaky is one thing. Slumping is another thing. And they've been slumping significantly, especially with the bats. So that's a concern for me. There really has not been, I think I used the word spark with Mike Gillespie in our last segment. There's been no spark. And that can change. That can change very quickly. And teams do it all the time. But really, I've been searching and searching and searching for some kind of indication that they've got that spark, at least offensively, and there's nothing right now. So I'm going to say no by the skin of their teeth.
So here's the other thing for me that leans me that way is the Twins haven't been playing very well either. The Mariners got a game and a half to make up, and they got to play this Houston series. Their schedule is a little bit more difficult. I don't think they'll hold off the Tigers, but I think they'll hold off the other two. It's going to be tough. It is going to be tough. The problem for the Mariners is they're starting to play well. But that's it. All right, there you go. Game one tonight. We'll get you the viewing, listening details in just a little bit. When we return, we'll switch over to the Kansas City Chiefs, 3-0. It's been an interesting 3-0, but they're 3-0. Dan Israel, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network and our Chiefs Insider, joins us next on Sports Daily. Thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up each and every morning here on KFH. We can continue that Chiefs discussion. We just ran out of time, but it's an interesting one on the 3-0 start. We'll do that later this week. We have all kinds of fun stuff. Kevin Saul joins us tomorrow. We'll have Shreya Slada stopping by to talk about the disaster that's been the KU football season. That's all coming. Coming up tonight, you've got the Chiefs Kingdom show at 5 o'clock here on KFH, and then Royals Nationals coverage begins at 6 o'clock right here on KFH as well. The Royals have got to get it done. We'll be back here to talk about that tomorrow as well. For Max Power, for Tommy Caster. Are we not in the last segment?
We're not done. No, we've got a couple of minutes left, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about what's on the network.
Goodness gracious.
You have been gone for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not good. That's not good. My apologies, everybody. That's not good, Al. Look, let's spend just a second. We might have a minute. My thing with the Chiefs and their comfort level with the way things are going so far, I just think they're very in their element and comfortable when games are coming down to the wire. Now, is there room to improve? Of course there is. They could be 0-3 right now. But as far as like short intermediate pass game, let games play into their defense, let just the things that made them win games in the postseason, it just feels like that is totally bled right into this year as far as stylistically the way that they want to play games this year. That's what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, I think that from an identity perspective, you're right that that's what it is. That's what their identity is, realistically. I disagree with you that that's the way they want to play. I think it's the way they have to play.
And you know, they'd like to win every game 40-0.
From a comfortability standpoint, I think that's probably where you and I disagree. I think that there would be some different ways they would like to deploy their weapons, but you know, you have to give what the defense, you know, take what the defense gives you, I guess.
Yeah, defenses aren't going to let them go over the top. I mean, they're just not. They haven't for 2 years, and it really probably 3 out of 4 years. They're just something. And what I'm curious about is if defenses switch that up, right? Do you take away the short to intermediate stuff and make the Chiefs go over the top? Maybe it's worth a shot. I don't know, but we'll see. And we'll pay attention to that, of course.